Welcome back to Herald Review Outside the Box podcast. I'm sports reporter Joey Wagner. We're sports editor Justin Kahn and MacArthur, boys basketball coach Ron Ingram. Ron, Justin and I were talking before this. Like, we talk to you a lot. We know you pretty well, but we don't know a lot about your past and your background. How did you get into coaching and basketball?
Well, I got into coaching out in California. I don't know if you guys remember. I know a guy by the name of Brad Davis. Used to play for the Dallas Mavericks.
Okay. It rings a bell.
Yeah, he didn't play much. No. But he kind of introduced me to coaching. I went out there to actually follow my girlfriend to California. You know, I wanted to play basketball. I was at a little junior college called San Jose City College. So I'm there thinking I'm the best guy there. You know, I can shoot the basketball, from Peoria, Maine. I'm the toughest guy out here. I'm better than all these California guys. That's what I'm thinking until they came to the gym. You know, a little 5'5" Filipino guy came in there, and I'm thinking he's their leading scorer. I'm taller than him, and I know I'm better than him, but he made me realize all I can do is shoot the basketball. I couldn't dribble left hand. I couldn't pull up with a jump shot. I couldn't do anything like that, you know. So I'm really getting, like, discouraged. I'm thinking, man. So there's a park in California called Washington Park. It's in Sunnyvale, California. That's where, like, a lot of good basketball players come. They come from Vegas, Washington. You know, they just come from all kind of places playing basketball. And that's where I met Brad Davis at. But before I met him, there were some kids over here just playing. So I'm looking at him thinking, man, I can teach this guy how to do something. So I'm over there working with the kids while I'm waiting on my game to come, working with these kids. So he came to me, and he was talking to me, and he's seen what I was doing. He said, you work good with the kids and stuff like that. And but at the time, I'm thinking, this is Brad Davis. I know this guy. I seen him play with Mark McGuire on the Dallas Mavericks. I'm watching him play. I'm like, no, he didn't. So I'm thinking, you know, once he saw me play, you know, he exchanged numbers. I'm thinking he about to maybe give me a tryout for the Dallas Mavericks. That's what I'm thinking, right? Nope. He wanted me to coach his nieces, not nephews. He wanted me to coach his nieces in the sixth grade. You know, I'm like, oh, my God. So I'm like, okay, I'll do that, you know. So that's how I got started coaching. And then I got offered a job at a company called Lockheed. So, I kind of got in trouble at the college I was at. So he said, well, you got to sit out. You can still go to school, but you got to sit out this year of basketball. I'm like, man, I don't want to do that. I don't want to go to school. I just want to play basketball. You know, that's my thinking. But that was the worst thing I could have did, because I took that job back in, like, the 80s. You know, you get offered a job paying $17 an hour, you know, at 21 years old. You're thinking, okay, I can do this. And then I can go over here and coach these kids. Okay, that's what I'm going to do. So that's what I did. And so, but by meeting him, it led me to meet other people like Tyra Vanderveer. I don't know if you guys heard of her. She's a Stanford coach back then. She was a Stanford women's basketball coach. Great coach. You know, started working for her camps. He introduced me to Jerry Tarkanian at the time at UNLV, and Stan Morrison. He was at that time coaching at San Jose State College. And so they kind of started letting me work these camps. But, you know, working at the camp at UNLV, that was a different kind of camp. It you know, you work them camps, you know, kids are learning how to dribble and shoot at every other camp. Nope, not at UNLV. His favorite thing was, let's go, let's run, we got to go. And that means when you get the ball, go. He was teaching kids fast break basketball up and down the court. So I'm thinking, wow, okay. So I'm thinking, man, so that made me really want to be a coach after going working his camp. And then you go to Tara Vanderveer's camp. She's got the control thing going on, just pass, shoot. I'm thinking, okay, because in California, that's the type of basketball they played. It wasn't run and gun. It was run and shoot. Something, I always called it run and gun until I went out there and met those guys. And so that's how I really got into basketball. And I met some great people along the way. Coach Montgomery, he used to coach at Cal and Stanford, and used to coach the NBA for Golden State Warriors at one time. So I met some good people out in California while I was out there. So that's how I got into coaching.
Now, you played at Manual, though.
Played at Manual, yes.
If you don't mind me asking, yeah. What years were those?
I played from 76 to 79.
Okay.
Yeah, for Coach Fan, and we played against people like Mark McGuire and Isaiah Thomas. You know, he was at St. Joe's, and I had a friend of mine named Johnny Washington. I thought he was the best basketball player ever. You know, I seen him get 30 on Isaiah Thomas, and then I seen Isaiah Thomas get drafted. I'm thinking, man, my friend, you know, he ate that guy up one day, man. You know, but he played for Western Illinois at that time. My buddy Johnny did, and he fell and broke his tailbone, and he was just out. So he just gave up basketball. Just gave it up.
So you went to California. Now I remember when we did the shot clock story, mm-hmm. we called you and you talked about that experience in California. Yep. Mm-hmm. We'll come back to that. But like, how did you come back to Illinois and Central Illinois?
After about 20 years, my daughter got really sick in Peoria. So, and they called me and told me she didn't have long to live. So I came back to hang out with her. And she was just laying in bed, and she said, "Dad, I'm going to be here longer than the doctor say. You got to stay here with me." So I said, "I'm going to be here as long as you want me to be here." So she ended up living another 5 years. So I promised her I would be there. So instead of me taking her back to California, I actually stayed in Peoria. And then that's when Manuel hired me, and, just went from there.
Now, how long were you at, so you started coaching at Manuel at that time. Mm-hmm. How did that come about?
Well, first, I got in touch with Wayne McClain, and then I said, "Man, I was coaching in California. I moved back here. I miss coaching. I want to continue coaching." So he gave me a phone number of the middle school that he used to coach at, which was called Blaine Sumner Middle School. And so I started coaching there. Started coaching the 7th, 8th grade boys, 7th, 8th grade girls, and they were feeding into Manuel High School. And so at that time, a coach by the name of Johnson came from and took Wayne McClain's spot when he went to Illinois. So I was feeding kids into him. So then they wanted me to coach at the high school level. But he ended up leaving, Johnson did, and Coach Booth, before Coach Booth, there was another coach there. But he didn't want me on his staff. But then there was a lady there coaching girls basketball. Her name is Janelle McLeod, but she was Janelle Polk when she was playing for University of Illinois. She was holding all kind of records, blocking shots, scoring records, everything. So she was a girls coach there. So she hired me on as the girls JV coach. So I coached there, and then I went to the boys' side. And when Coach Booth took the job, so that's how I got that manual.
And in the Peoria area, Derek Booth is very highly regarded for just the person he is, the type of coach he was. What was it like coaching with him? I mean, I don't think there's anybody who's going to say a bad thing about the guy.
You really can't. I mean, the worst thing I say about him was when he say practice over at 6 o'clock, you're there at 7. I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you. So, and I think I get that from him now. I tell my boys all the time, we're going to go from 3:30 to 5:30, but you see, I'm just not getting out of practice coming over here, So, but working with him was just like that. Just working with him, you're never working for Derek Booth. You're actually working with him. Yeah. I mean, he's like a mad scientist. He'll go into a room, come back out. He have all the stuff laid out, paperwork for all the coaches. He was just real professional about what he did, scheduling everything. Scheduling practices, sending out schedules to parents, and everything was professional with that guy, and so working for him was just like working with him. It was the greatest experience that I've had. So it made me realize leaving to be a head coach, I miss working with him as an assistant coach.
Now you also officiate. Then mm-hmm. Now you don't officiate anymore, correct?
Or yes, I do.
You still do officiate?
Yeah,
sure. Okay.
Yes, I do.
Tell me, how did you get into that?
Wayne McClain, actually, he was running a basketball. It wasn't a camp and it wasn't a tournament, but he had some teams coming. So he asked me, "Did I want to referee?" I'm like, "I've never refereed before in my life." So he introduced me to a guy that's been a reffing for a long time in Peoria, and his name is Mr. Watson. I don't know if you know him. He's been a scorekeeper for Manuel for like 50 years, So he was also a good referee. So he starts showing me how to referee, and then so that's when I started refereeing.
At what time? When was this?
This was in. I started refereeing in. It had to be right around 95, 96.
Okay, so boys and girls, or what?
I'm sorry, I take that back. It was 05, 06.
Okay, 05, 06.
Yeah,
okay,
05, 06. Yep.
And so what? Boys and girls basketball? What all do you
do? Now I do both, but mostly back then I started off just boys. Started off boys. And so, like, I was at, right now I do, during the season, I do grade school basketball.
Okay.
Middle school, grade school basketball. Like, I was just in Effingham. They had a tournament over the weekend. So after I left our game in Danville Saturday, I went to Effingham to referee some basketball.
Oh,
and that was brutal. That was brutal. So, yeah. But I like it. It keeps me going a little bit. And I always say that all coaches should ref a game. All referees should coach a game. And that's why you really hardly ever see me yelling and screaming at referees, because I referee. So that's why.
I wanted to ask, what do you think the current state of officiating is? I mean, it feels like there's not a lot of gyms that they're very well liked in, but for the most part, I think maybe a lot of people don't know what they're yelling about. Like, well, how do you evaluate officials in Illinois?
You said it right. I think a lot of people don't know what they're yelling about. Even some coaches don't know what they're yelling about, because a lot of the coaches don't read those rule books. You know, I'm just, when it comes to basketball and those rule books, I'm a nerd. I'll read them. I'll read them. And my staff asks me all the time, why are you reading that? Just go through that. You know, but I'll just read it every year. And fans, I don't yell at fans about what they say to referees, because they don't know what 3 seconds is sometimes. They don't know when every time the ball goes up, the 3 second shot, you know, it starts over, the count starts over. So they don't know a lot of stuff, you know. So you really can't be mad at fans, because fans are going to be fans. You know, they're not referees, they're not coaches. And then as far as referees, they're going to make mistakes. They're going to make mistakes. They don't lose basketball games for you. You know, we miss layups. We have the 20 turnovers, you know, so we don't run the offense right. We miss the shots. So we didn't play the right defense. And do we make bad calls? Yes. And do we miss calls? Yes, we do. But at the same time, you can't fault the referee for a losing basketball game.
So you've never had a fan get to you?
Yes, I have. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yes, I have. I was refereeing an AAU tournament. Those are the worst terms of refs. You know, cause it's just cutthroat basketball, and you got cutthroat fans. You know, so I was refing a game one time, and a lady told me this. I'm the referee out here. I'm the head referee, and this guy right here, he's a trail referee. So he sees all the action underneath the basket. I'm watching the action up there by the top of the key three-point line. Kid getting elbowed down there. I don't see it, but I'm standing by the lady, by the kid's mom, and she says, look, Mr. Referee, if my daughter get elbowed one more time, I'm going to come out there and elbow you. I'm like, oh, my God. So I'm thinking, so now these people are all from Chicago. So now she's going. So now I got like 10 people back here all going, just ready to come at me. I'm nervous. I'm scared. That was the last AAU basketball game I refereed. I said, I'll never go back to AAU basketball ever again. Give me the fifth graders. Give them to me.
Well, I mean, but I know from having kids, you'll see it at that age level too, parents getting on.
I do. And I don't know if you, I know you know Jason Crutcher.
Uh-huh, yeah.
You know, he probably won't tell you, but he's a good official. He's a good official.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, he's a referee with me like 20 years ago when we first started. He's a referee with me also. It was nuts for him to throw a fan out. I'm telling you. I've seen him throw a whole section out. He went over there and said, you and all of you, get out. You know, so Jason Crutcher was a good referee, man. He's a tough referee, man. So, you know, so it's crazy. Even at that level, fifth grade, sixth grade level, Fans are yelling. But Crutcher was one of those guys that he just didn't care. He did not care.
We've talked about that before. Sometimes I wonder why you don't see more officials throw fans out, but then I don't know if sometimes they don't feel like that falls on the athletic director or a principal. Is that something that you feel comfortable doing, or?
No, I don't. I've seen the referees throw fans out and get cussed out the worst way ever, you know. So, but you know, once you do it for a long time, you just learn to have deaf ears to fans.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like I said before, they just don't know basketball. They don't know basketball. There was a judge in Bloomington. I don't want to say his name, but there was a judge in Bloomington came after me one game. I'm refereeing the game. He's sitting there and he's screaming and yelling. I'm like, man, who is this guy yelling? I mean, and when the other referee said, well, that's his son out there, you're not making him call. I said, man, you're not making him calls. You know? So you make the calls down there. So, but this guy was yelling and screaming and told me I will never referee in Bloomington again, this and that. And I mean, he was going off. And then they finally told me, yeah, he's a judge. And I'm like, I said, but he doesn't have a right to yell at me this way. I mean, he can be a judge all he wants to, but I'm judging him right now. And I don't feel right about him right now. So, but yeah, we get it a lot.
I think you hit it on the head when you said, you know, if you've been doing it a long time, you know how to tone it out. And we kind of discovered in talking to officials, especially the younger ones, they just don't get paid enough to want to deal with that. Like, do you kind of see where some of these young, you've done it for a while, you know how to handle it, but it's a tough thing to handle if you're a younger person. Do you understand why they're kind of saying, I'm done here?
Yes, I do. I really do understand that, because referees are not appreciated enough. You know, you're getting yelled at by thousands of fans, and then these days you got smart mouth players these days, and then you got young coaches that really don't know. They're learning the game, so they don't know how to tone it back. They don't know how to just say, talk to a referee instead of yelling at a referee. Because a lot of referees, if you talk to them, they'll listen to you. But when you get to yelling at them, they really can't hear you, but they hear you. But they're just boiling inside right now. So at the end of the day, they're going to sit down, shut up, tee you up, something. So, you know, you've got to learn how to talk to referees.
Now, you mentioned Jason Crutcher, and he was obviously the connection that brought you to MacArthur. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about, you know, that time. I remember it was a little bit late, you know, in the game a little bit, and how did it come about that you and Jason started talking about it and you decided to put in for the job?
Well, there was another guy from Decatur that they really wanted to hire, but he didn't go to the interview, and I don't want to say his name, but he didn't go to the interview, so that's really why he called me. And he said, well, I know you love Manuel, and it's going to be hard to get you from there, but I want you to come and apply for this job. He didn't tell me I had the job. He said, I want you to come and apply for the job. And I said, man, I don't want to leave Manuel. I don't want to leave Coach Booth. I mean, I got a good thing going right here, man. I was really next in line for the job at Manuel High School, but I didn't think he was going to ever leave. You know, so I'm thinking, okay, I'll go apply. I went and talked to Coach Booth about it. I went and talked to Coach Van. I don't even remember who Coach Van is.
Coach Van Syak, right?
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. And he was my coach back in high school. Sure. Went and talked to him about it. He said, man, it'll be a great opportunity. It'll prepare you for other jobs, go through the interview process, this and that. So I'm thinking, okay, I'll do it. And not knowing that I would get the job. You know, I really didn't know I would get the job. And so I came and I gave a pretty good interview. Gave a good interview and in front of some good people. And then they hired me. They hired me.
No, you said you didn't think Coach Booth would leave less than, 3 years, I think? After
he left here. After 3 years, yeah.
Did you feel a pull to apply to go back to Manuel? I mean,
They called me. They tried to get me to come back. And so I went and talked to Crutcher about it, and I went to talk to Tyrese Bryson about it and Amir Brummett. And
really?
Then, yeah, and sat down and had a long talk with Amir and my little nephew, Keenan Ingram, and he didn't want to go back. Keenan didn't want to go back. My fiance, she had got a good job here at the hospital. She didn't really want to go back. She was torn. She wanted to go back because, her family's there, but she didn't want to go back. I got a granddaughter here that's going to school here at MacArthur. She wanted to stay at MacArthur. Tyrese Bryson really was the one. He was the one. Him and Jason Crutcher, we sat down and we talked, and Crutcher was like, man, it's not like we want you to go. You're good here. We want you to stay here. Tyrese Bryson was like one of the saddest people at that time. Like, he didn't want me to go, and I felt bad that if I leave, I'm leaving Tyrese Bryson, because when I got the job, I asked Jason Crutcher, does Tyrese Bryson live in this town still? He said, yes. I said, I want him on my staff. So I didn't know anything about him coaching. I just knew about him playing. And I was living in California. I used to watch him play all the time at Illinois State. And then, I watched him torch Purdue for 38, So, but I've always liked how he played. And so I knew the people here liked him. So I figured if I get him here, maybe he'll maybe get some players here, because, people love him that much. So I brought him with me, and we've been together since day one. So I didn't want to leave him behind. And if I knew for sure that he would get the job if I left, I would have left. But he told me then he wasn't ready to be a head coach, and he's ready. Tyrese Bryson's ready to be a head coach, I'm telling you right now. And maybe at another level. He can coach college basketball. I really believe he can.
Yeah.
But he'll tell you all the time, I'm not ready to go, I'm not ready to go. I'm not ready to be a head coach. He's ready to be a head coach. He really is. And I didn't want to leave him. I didn't want to leave him. So, and then Amir told me, he said, Coach, if you go, I quit. I don't want you to go. But I knew he wouldn't quit. I knew he wouldn't quit. He loves basketball. So he said, you call Peoria and tell him you're not coming. That was Amir, man. So, that made me feel welcome, made me feel like I wanted to stay. And, a lot of people to this very day tell me, you should have left and took that job. People in Peoria tell me that. People in Decatur tell me the same thing. I said, but, I really started something here. And I really want to finish something here. I truly have a goal here. And my goal is always to win the first game of the year and win the last game of the year. So that means if you win the last game of the year, that means you won state. So that's always my goal. At least try to get MacArthur to state.
I find it interesting that the three of us who know Amir and really Armand pretty well, it's not really a surprise that you talk to Amir, to me at least, but maybe people who don't know Amir would be surprised to hear that he was one of those core three people you talked to. Why? What is it about him that it was so important that you talked to him before he made his choice?
Because the relationship that me and him built from day one. Because he's been on, when I got the job, I brought him on varsity with me right away. He was on varsity. I brought his brother too, but his brother did some things and I took him back off varsity. But me and Amir have been together since, me, Amir, and Bryson. We've been together since day one. So he, and I was shocked that he said what he said. I was surprised, more just like everybody. I was surprised because, it wasn't always the best relationship with me and Amir. I'm always, get out. Forget you, coach. Other words, but, stuff like that. I would kick him out for weeks. I kicked him out for a whole summer one time, but so I'm, and then people tell me, well, Ymir say he don't like you. I said, but I love him. He likes me. He just don't like the things I'm doing. He don't like the discipline I'm doing. So, but at the end of the day, I remember that last game, he gave me a big hug and I felt a teardrop, felt a teardrop come from his face down my face, So, he was my guy. I love Ymir Bruman.
That's awesome. Now, when you first got to when Crutcher first talked to you about the job, what did you know about MacArthur basketball? Did you know or Decatur even?
I knew about Decatur basketball. I knew Dallas McClain. I knew Keymonte Johnson because when I was refereeing, there was a thing called AYBT, and they played in it. So I knew about them, but I didn't know anything else. I knew Rodney Walker could jump out the gym. That's all I knew. I knew Tyrese Bryson. That's all I knew. I knew Dave Kreps.
Sure, from AYBT, right.
Robo Kreps. I knew them guys. But I didn't know much about basketball, so I started looking stuff up, MacArthur basketball. And, I really couldn't find a lot about MacArthur basketball. But the stuff I did find out, I knew there were some good players in Decatur. I knew that. There's a lot of people sleep on players in Decatur. They don't think there's basketball players here. They're wrong. We have to do something to take it to another level, but there's some good basketball players in the city of Decatur. So I really didn't know much about it at all.
When you first saw the team, I would think you were pleasantly surprised because there are good players in this program.
Yes, I really was. I met Kamari Jones and Cortez Bonds and Spates, and the other Bonds, and I just had a nice Brummett. I had a Khalil Brummett was a Brummett's uncle at the time, and then the two Brummetts came, and so we had a really nice team. I'm thinking, man, we don't have any 6'7", 6'8" kids, but I got a bunch of 6'3"s, so I can do something with that, So that was one of the best teams I've ever had. That team right there was one of the best teams. They were very well coached. It's like it was a good fit for me. It's like most times you could you think you got a good fit, but it just don't feel right. It's just like but that team. It felt right. Everything felt right about that team. They played good defense. They played together. They all hung out together. They loved each other. There was no arguing. It's like, and when they did, they fixed it. I didn't have to fix it. They fixed it. With these teams I've got now, we've got to fix it as coaches. But that team, they fixed everything themselves.
When you talk about Tyrese, it's similar to Peoria. I think Decatur, in terms of like bigger cities, does a really good job of kind of holding those former players on a pedestal, mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. those players garner respect even years after they played. Were you surprised to see that when you got here? And is that similar to Peoria in that way?
It's similar in a way, but it's like the Peoria guys will play 24 hours a day if they have to. If they can get a gym or outside, that's where they're going. If you go to Peoria right now, cold as it is, you will see some kids out there with a basketball, with a coat on, out there shooting. Even though they got all these games and NBA lives and everything like that, the Peoria kids will put that down to go play basketball somewhere. So that's the only difference in Decatur and Peoria. But like I said, Decatur has some good basketball players.
How do you get to Decatur? And I guess it's tough for you because by the time they get to you, they've needed to have been doing that, from the beginning. But what does Decatur have to do to get to be like Peoria and get kids out and playing all the time?
A lot of times it has to do with the parents. The parents are going to have to just start kicking them kids out the house and making them go play basketball, Sometimes we'll have the gym open. Even now we'll open gym on Sundays and it's not mandatory to come, but only four will come, So we're wondering what happened to the other 11, or the JV guys or something, There's always something. Well, my mom said I couldn't come. My mom said I had to do this. My mom said I had to do that. I got a babysit. And not taking away from that, if they have to. But I tell my guys, if you got a babysit, bring the kids. Just bring them. They can sit down and watch you play basketball, work on your game, work on your shooting. They can do that. So it has a lot to do with the stuff at home. If that gets right, because we got a lot of kids here that can probably go play college basketball, if they put the time into it. Like R.J. Walker, he puts the time in. There's not a day in that hot gym down there on El Dorado where if you go to any day, you will see him in there sweating, shooting, dribbling, running, boxing, lifting weights, all kinds of stuff. That's why he's doing what he's doing now, because he puts time into the basketball game.
One of the things I've grown to appreciate, since I've learned MacArthur, is just I like them, and not anything against any other coaching staff, but you guys are very – caring and like family-oriented coaching staff, and mm-hmm. I think we learned that a lot when we talked to Derek Spates. Mm-hmm. Was that something that you were drawn to? Like, did you notice that immediately when you got there, that kind of that student-first, that athlete-first type thing? And did you like that, obviously?
I did like it. I did like it, and that you mentioned Derek Spates. Really, it was because of him. He really just kind of took me and my nephew under his wing. You know, it's like, okay, I'm going to show you this, show you this, tell you about this person, that person, told me where to go eat. I mean, just everything, man. So from day one, Derek Spates and his uncle, Tommy, they've just been, like, really cool with me. And so I'm like, wow. Then I seen how he was with his football players. I've seen him just get into their bus. I'm thinking, man, that kid's going to quit. He's not coming back. But the next day, him and Coach Space walking down the hall, you know, hugging each other, giving, you know, rubbing heads. I'm like, man, look at this, man. This is cool right here, man. So, you know, I've seen that with them guys, and I'm thinking, okay, this can work for me then. Because my coach Van, told me, I said, man, I don't know if they're going to like me, like my personality. He said, man, after 2 weeks, those kids are going to like you. They're going to like you. Because of how you are and the type of person you are, they're going to like you. You know, so I said, okay, I'm going to go ahead and give it a try. So, yeah, Derek Space, he showed me a lot when I got here.
You mentioned that your personality, and that's something, Julian, I actually, it was funny, we were talking about that before you came in, is that, I mean, like you mentioned, you don't yell at the refs, you're just a really nice guy, and really personable and fun to talk to. I mean, that was the first time I met you, I remember going, man, I really like this new McCarver coach, and every writer that has come, you know, since me has been, I really like Coach Ingram, and is that just kind of how you've always been?
And Coach Van's always been that way. You know, I used to see him just, the worst thing I've ever seen him do, and he never cussed, you know, the worst thing he ever said was, damn it to hell. No, that's all he ever said, you know. And I've seen him to a referee one time, he just like, oh, baloney, and just threw his hand up, and that was it. But other than that, he never yelled at the referee. When I first started coaching, he saw me coach. He didn't like what he saw. I mean, I jumped up, yelled at a referee. I mean, I'm screaming. You got to be kidding me, and blah, 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 you know. And so he said, that's not good, Ronnie. And he called me Ronnie. He said, that's not good, Ronnie. I can't believe you did that. You know, I don't know where you get that from. Who are you watching to do something like that, you know? So he brought me down to earth, man. He brought me down to earth. And so I'm like, man, it's right. I've never seen him do that. And even Wayne McClain, you know, he might get in the referees, but he had the respect for referees, and referees respected him.
Right. Now, have you ever got a technical?
Yeah, but it wasn't one of those technicals where I'm yelling and screaming at the referee. It was something stupid, like not having the right number in the book.
Oh, right.
Something real stupid, you know. And that's a worse feeling than yelling at a referee. It really is, man. Because now I feel really stupid, like, golly, I didn't do that, man. So now I'm blaming it on the guy at the scores. It was his fault. He did it, you know, but trying to get everybody thinking it wasn't me. But it was me. It was me, yeah.
Now, last year you had the health scare at the game. Mm-hmm. I just want to ask you, how are you feeling? How's everything with your health?
Everything's better. As a matter of fact, I just went to the doctor about 2 weeks ago, and he told me, he said, well, you know what, you're doing better, so that's not making another appointment for another year. So I'm thinking, okay, that's great. So, yeah, everything's getting better, and I'm getting my weight back and, you know, getting my strength back and everything. So, but, you know, those last 2 years was stressful for me, man. It was stressful for me dealing with the type of players we had and, you know, trying to make sure we win games, and we were losing basketball games last year at the beginning going 7-7. And, you know, so that was stressful, you know, having parents, you know, saying, you know, get him back to Peoria, get him out of here, you know, stuff like that, you know. Yeah, so I was going through that, and, you know, so I didn't know how to take that. You know, because in Peoria, you know, you really didn't lose a lot, but when you did lose, fans wasn't always on you. You know, it wasn't on you, like, get him out of here. I don't want him as a coach. It wasn't doing that. So I went through that here at MacArthur, so the stress came, you know. So that's what the doctors kept telling me. You're just stressing. You got to quit stressing. So if you got to get rid of something you love to stop stressing, you got to do that. So I'm thinking, shoot, I love basketball. I'm not going to get rid of that right now, you know. So, you know, but so that's what it was. That was just a lot of stress going on in my life. But now I can handle it, because I still got parents now, you know, saying stuff like that. You know, hey, get him out of here. Get him out of here, man. But, you know, I still learned to love those parents, though. And you know, my daddy told me a long time ago, if there's 100 people in the room and 99 of them hated you, but one of them liked you, you got to concentrate on that one person. But you still got to love those 99 people.
Now, when that happened, I mean, the health scare kind of, the stress is one thing, but when your health is impacted, did you kind of question if you wanted to do this anymore, to be a coach? And I mean,
I did.
It kind of changes a lot, doesn't it?
I did. I thought to myself, this is going to be my last year. Matter of fact, I told myself, if I go through this again next year, I'm going to quit. Yeah, because I really didn't want to go through that with the heart issue and the ulcers. You know, I didn't want to keep going through that. So I did tell myself, if I get sick again like that, I'm going to give it up.
Was that a tough thing to come to grips with?
It was, but my fiance is always there by my side, and she was, once she was okay with it, and she's turning to be a good coach herself. You know, she don't like basketball, but she loves MacArthur basketball. You know, she bleeds blue now. You know, she went to Manual too, but when I was coaching at Manual, she probably went to 2 games in 10 years. But now she won't miss a game. She'll call off work and go to a game now. So and she'll call me and say, "Well, I think you need to run this boy more. You need to run this play a little bit more." I said, "You don't know about a play. Don't tell me about a play." You know, but she's always by my side, and she actually talked me out of not quitting. You know, she did. You know, she started, she's into this health stuff. So she started making the right kind of tea for me, stop eating this, start eating that. You know, I'm like, but I like this. You know, but if you want to live longer and coach longer, you will eat this. So, just stuff like that, giving up sugar and drinking water all the time, so she got me on a nice diet now. I'm used to it now, yeah. So.
Have you had to come up with, I guess, ways to deal with the stress of coaching? I mean, because you're always going to have that. No matter what, that's kind of always going to be there. Have you had to come up with ways to deal with that?
Yes, I have, actually. I did, and I used to think about it, and she used to make me write stuff down that that was kind of stressful. And because, you cause a lot of stress on yourself before other people will. So I'm thinking, man, you're right. So I started writing stuff down that I was doing, like losing a game. Sometimes I go home after losing a game, I'm looking at film for like 4 or 5 hours after the game, thinking, okay, how we lose? Okay, we did this, we did. Golly, I can't believe, stuff like that, So I've learned to tone that down. Instead of spending 24 hours with basketball, I learned to spend 16 hours with basketball. So it's just stuff like that. And I know that if I'm having a bad day, I know that if I go to a basketball practice, I'm not going to take it out on that kid just because we lost because I'm having a bad day now. I'm just going to move on from it. So there's a lot of stuff that I've learned to deal with and start doing it to take care of my stress.
I really quickly want to talk with you about the shot clock. Obviously, the debate of it should be in high school in Illinois. You dealt with it in California. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on it, and do you see a developing need for it?
I do. Even though people hate it when I run stall, they hate it. Yeah, some of my fans hate it too, man. I did it in the game a couple of games ago, and I heard a lady say, "Man, I hate it when they do this." And I think I know who that lady was too, man. I want to talk to her later on. But I like the shot clock. I really do, because there's things you can do with that shot clock in basketball, and Like for instance, when we had a 30-second shot clock out there, the last 2 minutes, I like stalling with the last 2 minutes. So what I would do is stall till the last, to like 7 seconds left on the shot clock, and then run a set play. So there's a lot of things you can do with that, and it'd also help the other team, like a team that's like maybe averaging 40 points a game, and another team that's averaging 70 some points a game. You don't want this team to keep stalling, so this team won't get their 40. I know that might sound crazy from a coach. You just want to beat everybody by a lot of points. But, I still want that other team not to feel so embarrassed. That's just me. Right. A lot of coaches won't say that, but that's just me.
Well, and I think, too, as a coach like you who really focuses on the defensive side and loves the defensive side of the game, you can get guys to play hard for 30 seconds, maybe a little easier than you can for 2 minutes or something.
I definitely agree with that. You're right about that. Now, matter of fact, I watched a college game the other day, and I saw how a team did that. They, for 15 seconds, they ran a zone. Then for the next 10 seconds, their man-to-man just snapped. They just went out and started denying all over the court and not shadowing basketball, not letting the guy catch the basketball. I'm thinking, wow. That's why we need a 30-second shot clock. I can handle that. I love that kind of defense right there.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That would be.
Well, Ron, I appreciate it, man. Thank you. I know you got a big game coming up on Friday against Eisenhower.
We do.
Thanks for coming in and taking the time.
I appreciate you guys, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Ron.